This is Brad.
I want everybody to listen to this gentleman right here is Mr. Brad Thompson, who is the man. Who is the man in North Carolina.
Well, that's an exaggeration if I ever heard one.
He makes everything work.
All right.
Brad, talk about yourself.
Well, you know, I've been in Raleigh for a long time. I came here from I grew up in Lumberton and in Goldsboro. But I've been in Raleigh since the mid-60s, went to NC State and got an engineering degree. But I basically have been doing advocacy work ever since. And I've been involved in a whole lot of things. They say I'm the guy with the red tie, but, you know, I wear a red tie like a dashiki, and that's about it. But anyway, in the 90s, I served as mayor pro tem of Raleigh, and I left that after three terms and did not seek reelection, and I was appointed as the state director for the U.S. Senate. At that point, John Edwards, who, you know, we know about in trial.
That seems to ring a bell.
Yeah. And since that time, after working a little time with Rav Campbell, he and I opened this firm together and called Brad Thompson and Associates. Rav did not survive, but I have, for the past 7 years, I've been doing advocacy for groups and organizations that I believe in, with the hope that I can use the experience of those who have, earned a lot of money and other things, and redirect that experience and that knowledge toward helping the communities in which they come from. And we've been doing pretty good.
Well, that's only half the information, ladies and gentlemen. and we need a three-hour show just to give a little touch on the first part of his whole historic life. But there's one thing he's really involved with, and it is the Alliance of North Carolina Black Elected Officials.
I am. I'm very proud of that organization.
Tell us about that organization.
Well, you know, the organization came about 7 years ago, and the reason was that we found that many people who were elected officials or advocates were finger-pointing to other people to say, I would be great or I could do this thing if, in fact, so-and-so was doing his part. Well, the reality is that each of these persons is empowered to do something wherever they are, whether they are, you know, a deacon in a church or head of a CDC or a county commissioner or on the school board or the mayor of a small town or on the board of counselors for a municipality, mm-hmm. Serving in the General Assembly, U.S. Congressperson, everybody can do something. And the reality is that the people who do something or can do something commit themselves to doing what they can do, well, everything gets better for everybody. So rather than finger-pointing, I think our organization was focused on, number one, doing something where you are. That is, accepting responsibility that as an elected official, as an advocate, as a leader, that you should be able to make a difference wherever you're planted, whatever your job is. If it's to pick up paper or to vote for a big federal budget, it doesn't matter. Everybody is important. That's the fundamental reason for the alliance. And we have a lot of different organizations, Black elected officials, including everybody from the Legislative Black Caucus to the congressmen to the Black mayors to the Black school board members to the Black municipal officials to the Black county officials. But it's more than that. It includes the NAACP presidents. It includes the CDC presidents. It includes the Teachers Association. It includes the State Employees Association. It includes trade unionists. It includes the Black publishers. Everybody who has a role, they pull together under this alliance. And the leaders of those groups meet once a month by phone and once a quarter face-to-face to kind of discuss common issues and what can I do about it. And we decided, Michael, to focus on five issues because we believe that though there are a lot of issues that need something done, we really made a commitment of trying to use the voice and the strength of the alliance to move something forward. A lot of the stuff that we do, we talk about, but nothing ever happens. We don't get any legislation passed. We don't do anything in terms of moving the ball. So we tended to focus on healthcare, on economic empowerment, political empowerment, education, and justice issues, those five areas. And we have been successful in pressing the case. For an example, we started out with these five issues. We wanted the Voting Rights Act provisions reenacted, and they were. We wanted a moratorium on the death penalty. Well, we haven't got a moratorium, but nobody has been executed in North Carolina in the past 5 years. And we wanted a moratorium on these landfills that were impacting low-wealth communities and without studying the health consequences of these types of things. And we wanted to deal with that. We wanted, obviously, a health care bill passed, and it did pass. We wanted a North Carolina to come up to date in terms of the wage that it was paying people. And we had a minimum wage act in North Carolina passed that led the nation, one of the ones that led the nation. So we've had an impact in terms of things that directly affect our communities, communities of color, communities of people that are low wealth throughout the state. And I think it's because we have joined our voices together to try to make things happen.
Well, you know, you see, yeah, I mean, that is a massive, massive undertaking. And you touched on a few issues that are just with the Regressive Party are flagrant in the minds of everybody now. I mean, with to get the legislation together, in order to pass legislation, you have to have like-minded people to make compromise to pass legislation. And if you don't have like-minded people, how do you get this done?
You don't. And that's okay. What would happen. You know, these issues of affecting us were just going untouched. You know, people giving a whole lot of mouth, but nobody was passing anything. And we've seen initiatives now come forward, like the HKONJ stuff from the NAACP. Great. The Black Legislative Caucus now has an agenda, and they tend to operate to try to advance that agenda. That's great. And there's also, you know, the sharing that occurs allows people in, whether you're in Windfall or in Winston-Salem, you know, you can share some of the same issues that affect people, or, you know, regardless of the size of the town. And so they can come up with resolutions, they can come up with actions by sharing, you know, what's going on in these other towns and cities. And so they understand how they can introduce legislation, not just sit on their hands, but advance something that might have a consequence. If these counties, for example, have control of the tax dollars, and so whether they're going to fund public education or whether they're going to fund other things, new buildings or whatever, you know, it's a decision that they can make. And so it's in their hands. So therefore we have promoted advocacy and an understanding of how you have certain powers that if you were act aggressively and aware of the consequence of these things on people of color and the people of low wealth, then maybe you can make a difference.
Right. Hold on a minute. We got somebody else on here. And who might this be?
Well, hi,
is
Michael.
This,
how are you?
Is this Grace?
How are you?
I feel fine. And you know who's on the line here? That's Brad Thompson. Grace is Brad. This
Grace.
Is Grace.
Hey, Grace, how you doing?
I'm just fine, thank you. I was listening into your conversation with Michael, and you know, this is amazing, Greg. You actually managed to silence Michael for about 10 minutes. He didn't interrupt you one second. You must have been really profound, buddy.
And the reason why I wanted Grace to chime in on this, Brad, with what you said about the health care bill. You know, there are so many things that people don't understand about how and I'm going to go, I'm going to have a probably a whole show on how a bill is passed. Because people don't understand what a major undertaking it is to get a bill to be organized, you know, as long as Alec is not doing it. A bill is difficult.
Right. If Alec's doing it, it's just reason. And the thing is, because you have the entire House of Representatives, I believe strongly, if you have all the Republicans of the House of Congress, House of Representatives in their pocket, along with, I'm sure, quite a few blue-down Democrats.
What has the alliance done for health care or tried to do?
Well, the first thing, you know, we wanted to make sure that those people who were in the House understood the importance of health care. I mean, we had, we had almost 2 million North Carolinians who were without health care.
Mm-hmm.
2 million, and this is out of a state with less than 10 million people. So fully 20% of our people were either underinsured or non-insured, and that includes many children. And that was borne out by a study from Duke University. Well, I guess it has credibility. And
I don't know. I'm a heel, honey. I don't know about Blue Devil.
I don't know either. You know, I went to NC State, so... I'm not sure either of those has that much credibility, but I'm okay. But I am clear about this, that there are people in the state that are consistently making the decision to not get care. They are either going to emergency rooms, or sometimes they don't go to anything, and so they just let their care, you know, diminish, and before you know it, they're in a life-threatening situation. They've had a stroke or something has happened, a heart attack, and they have intervention care. But by the time that they're doing that, they're on their demise. And so people of color and low-wealth people, you know, often that means that they die early. And that can be changed if we had the kind of care where everybody who was sick could be taken care of. I don't know. That just seems to make a whole lot of sense to me. But
Grace, you're involved in this on a daily basis. Have you? What states have you seen? Just the healthcare bill was passed.
Greg, I'm listening to you make all your comments, and you know they're very, very sound and valid. I would like to add a little bit to what you have stated. And that is that we've got to start revising the terminology healthcare, okay? Because I hear this all the time. People honestly believe that everyone has the capability to get healthcare. What they don't realize is they know it's not true. That 20% that you're talking about, Greg?
Yes.
Right, that 20% don't have health care. Health care is the type of care that you get on an ongoing basis. Mm-hmm. So you have a primary care provider who can give you a prescription for your diabetes or for your hypertension or for your asthma or for your cholesterol or for whatever it is that you have. Okay, that's health care.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about going to the emergency room or to urgent care or something like that for a sickness, that's not health care. That's urgent care.
That's urgent care. That's true.
Right. The doctors in the emergency room don't give you prescriptions on an ongoing basis. Look, if you go in there in pain, what do? They might give you a prescription for 9 pills. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you go in there with high blood pressure, you may or may not get a prescription a month at the very most. But your blood pressure doesn't get resolved in a month. This is an ongoing thing. The diabetes doesn't get resolved in a month.
It's not. Those are life managed conditions.
Exactly. So then you talk about, you know, then let's address the issue of people with, say, for example, as you were saying, you know, if they don't get health care, they generally don't seek it out because it costs so much money.
Yes.
It costs so very much money. You know, what does it cost if you don't have health care? To go to a doctor, what is it, $135?
Well, if you go with the kind doctor, it is. It's often more than that.
If you go with
kind
doctor, it's $175.
That's
well,
right.
I got news for you, because I'm opening up my own clinic, and I'm determined that I am not going to charge that much for people who don't have health care. Now, here's the deal. We have the community free clinic. We see people who have to fit certain criteria. Okay, they have to have no insurance. They have to, their income has to fall within a certain criteria for us to see them at the free clinic. And at the free clinic, we provide them with health care. We see them on an ongoing basis. We provide them with the visit for free, the medications for free, the tests for free, surgery even for free. But the surgery for free is something that we really have to push for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's difficult. Now, what we've got, however, like you said, Greg, somebody gets sick, what happens? If somebody has a high blood pressure and strokes up, if they're lucky, they will die. And this is a very cruel thing to say, but it's the gospel truth. If they're not lucky, they will live and become a vegetable incapacitated and a drain on our society as long as they live. So for all these people who consistently complain about the high cost of health care, this is what they need to understand. If we provide the preventive care for our, you know, everyone, now the poorest people are always the ones that get the sickest. We know.
Yes.
So therefore, the minorities are the ones who always get the sickest. Okay, so if we can provide, if we do things to provide health care for all, never mind the income level, okay, for all of our citizens, then we will ultimately, and maybe at the front end it might cost us a little bit more money, but at the back end it will save us millions, maybe billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'll no longer have people who have gotten into crisis, who have stroked up. Now, you can stroke from hypertension.
You can stroke from
diabetes. You know, blood sugar is too high or too low. You can stroke
cholesterol.
Oh, sure. And if asthma, you can go into respiratory distress, have to have a ventilator or COPD. We need to educate people on smoking. I mean, there are so many things that need to be done. So I hear people saying to me a lot, well, you know, because I get very annoyed when people talk about claiming that the people who don't have insurance really don't want insurance. Okay.
Yes.
They don't want insurance, so they should just go get a job. And my response is my patients have 3 to 4 jobs, many of them part-time jobs, 3 to 4 part-time jobs. Collectively, all the part-time jobs, they work maybe 60 to 80 hours a week, but they get basic minimum wage, and they cannot afford to buy insurance. So they don't qualify into Medicaid because, why? They make too much money. Many of them they're now disqualified from the free clinic because they make, you know, $100 more.
Well, that's what I couldn't understand from, I think it was Newt Gingrich that made the comment that poor people don't work. He must know some different poor people than I know. The poor people I know work hard. You know, they get the hardest jobs. They have to work the longest. They get the lowest wage. Almost all the poor people I know are people who work every day and work hard.
Well, you know, I want to ask both of you this question that really bothers me is that we have the insurance companies who, if every single person was receiving health care with a single payer, they would make more money than they make now. Now, and I don't want to sound like they're one of these conspiracy theorists. Do they want people not to get sick, or they want people to get sick?
Well, you know, the insurance companies are not in the business of making people healthy. They're in the business of making money. And I think that as a paramount condition, they believe that if the free market allows them to have the ability to go out and do what they want to do, to charge what they can for procedures, to charge what they can for drugs, those kind of things, that their bottom lines will be fed. And I think that, you know, having a commitment to care for people is secondary to their commitment to making money.
Okay, but Grace, let me ask you like this, Grace, you're absolutely correct. This is what I want to ask you. If that, no, you're involved in the healthcare system, so you know how these insurance companies work. How can they not make more money when more people are on the insurance rolls?
Well, they actually do, Michael, and you hit the nail on the head. If you've got all the 46 to 50 million people that are now uninsured, required to have get insurance, of course, they will make more money. In fact, they will make a whole buku's and buckets of money because listen to this, okay, and this is something that very few people know. The insurance companies can only charge what they, there's a law that says the insurance company can only charge at the maximum three times what the minimum for any family costs. So, therefore, if your minimum is $300, the maximum they can charge for, you know, to you is $1,200. So guess what these lovely little insurance companies are doing? They're lobbying Congress now to raise the base charge, right? They want to raise it from $300 to $800. So now to $800, and yes, you heard me, to $800.
So it'll be $2,400.
Correct. They're amazing at how devious they are.
Devious.
Rolling over and saying, oh, of course we have to do this because healthcare costs have gone up so much. And, I mean,
yeah.
the idiots, they're speaking, they can't even see that raising this, healthcare costs are so high, so why are you raising it even more, idiots?
Well, that's the point about making more money. The reality is if healthcare costs are going up 18% per year, to say that you can make the same or less, well, I don't think that's enough. You know, what's reasonable? What's fair? What's appropriate? And, you know, they're getting these exorbitant returns, and to say that, well, you can get the same return if you do something else, it's still no good because the cost of healthcare is out of proportion with what we receive as a people. And I would just say, that we need to get it in line. We need to get the cost in line. I commend the system for asking the question, what can I do, rather than what do you need to do? And too many people ask that question, and they don't ask the question, what can I do? You start with you in terms of what you can do. And I think through her efforts to provide care to people who need it, that we will start the ball rolling in the right direction.
And this is, again, I am not preaching one religion over another, but I am saying that any truly religious person, okay, I don't necessarily have to cite Christianity or anything like that, but any person who truly is religious, and I use the term religious, I don't mean someone that goes to church every single day, reads the Bible every single day, you know, I'm talking about somebody with truly the philosophy of religion, being good to each other, okay, if you truly are a religious person, you will sit down and you will ask yourself, what have I done to help my fellow man?
Yeah.
Okay, what have I given back? I have so much. I have been given so much. What have I given back?
That's a good question.
This weekend coming up, starting this Thursday from April 26th to the 28th, the Alliance of North Carolina Black Elected Officials is having their annual summit at the Sheridan in Raleigh, downtown Raleigh. And we're going to have workshops. Is that right, Brad?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be phenomenal. We're starting out on Thursday with how to assure financial sustainability for low-wealth communities. I think that's a good discussion. On Thursday night, we're going to have a concert with Gerald Austin of the Manhattans, you know, just kiss and say goodbye. Y'all remember that?
Right.
Then Friday, we're going to have a tremendous number of workshops, one on jobs, one on healthcare, I'll use that term, healthcare, and one on education, and they're all led by people who have great ideas in that area. We're going to have Anika Khan, who's going to be with us at midday. She's an economist, and she's going to say, how do we get out of this mess? And then we're having speaking that evening is going to be a guy named Michael Strautmanis, and he's the senior counselor to the president and the commission on jobs and competitiveness.
Yes.
He will be there for that evening, and he will talk about how we're going to get out of this recovery or their plan. And on Saturday we will have Linwood Long from the support center, and then we will after that we will have the Salvation and Deliverance Choir, which won the contest of the best choir in America. They're from Edgecombe County. So we're just going to have a great, great event.
Who's going to be the guest speaker?
The best guest speaker is going to be replacing the mayor. Charlotte is going to be Michael Strautmeyer. He's a senior executive to the president, senior counselor to the president on jobs. And jobs is an area that is a great concern to our community. So we're really just having a great time. It's going to be a wonderful thing here in Raleigh. April 26th, 27th, and 28th, the NC Black Summit. This is the 7th annual, and we're just going to have a good time, but we're also going to be very inspired by the discussion and the speakers.
Well, one thing I'd like both of you to just answer was, because it's one of the points that you brought up, Brad, and that was the legislation to stop the death penalty. I understand that California now has a bill out to stop the death penalty and to give a life in jail without parole. Where are we at on that here in this?
Well, in North Carolina, we have not stopped the death penalty. There was a legal question of whether the doctors were not abiding by their oath by presiding over the killing of people.
Right.
And
I remember that kerfuffle.
Yeah, that has stopped the execution of people in North Carolina. Now we have a number of things: the Racial Justice Act. That a disproportionate number of the people who were committed to death were people of color, African-American people, and that Racial Justice Act is supposed to allow that to be considered in the sentencing. So we still got a long ways to go in North Carolina. The capital punishment is still the law here in North Carolina, but we just have been able to fight back and not have it implemented over the past 5-6 years.
Grace, what have you in your travels? I know you were just out. How is Joe?
He's fine. Thank you for asking. Thank you so
good,
much,
Bob. Good. But I know that that's something that you've been looking at also. Grace?
Yes. Absolutely. We're talking about inequalities without any question. And we see them... we see them across the nation. Let's just talk about North Carolina in and of itself. I see there's a huge disconnect between what the Republicans say they want for our nation versus what they're actually doing for our nation.
Mm-hmm.
And this disconnect is that they're saying, oh, they want to provide jobs, they want better lives, they want better our children to have better futures. They say all of those things, but then they implement and they propose these cockamamie rules that would do absolutely nothing to promote the welfare of the minority. Now we have to see exactly where it stands, and the middle class, the minority.
Right.
It's like they want to prevent minorities from becoming part of the middle class, and then they want to destroy the middle class completely and only have the elite robber baron class and the rest of us as honestly slaves, keeping us sick. So, no, I'm not a conspiracy theorist myself, but it just doesn't make sense that they would want people sick. In 100 years ago, the health care was charity care. And with the rich people that provided charity care for their workers, for their slaves, for the people who worked in their factories. Mm-hmm. But what, are we going back to that now?
That's a good idea. We can do that.
we figure out how we now all of a sudden would have to say yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, you know, in order to get abandoned. I mean, you know, it just doesn't make, if you think about it, it makes no sense at all. I cannot.
But before we go, I just like to say one more time about Brad. If people want to come to the event, how do they proceed to come to the event?
Well, they can just call in and call this number 919-833-6394, or visit the website www.ncblacksummit.org. www.ncblacksummit.org, and there's a registration bullet there, and either you can call in, fax it in, pay by credit card, however you want to do it, and you can come, and I can assure you, you will be well rewarded by your time.
And the tickets are what? What's the tickets?
Well, the tickets are for the entire event. That's Thursday through Saturday, all meals included, all the entertainment, everything is $175. If you register at the door, it's $199. However,
okay.
You know, you're welcome to attend any of the events, but if you're going to eat, you got to pay. But you can come to the events. Just anything that you that is a you know, an eating event is an event that there's a charge. But you are welcome,
right,
and it is open to the public to come to any of the activities and any of the workshops, etc. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Grace. Tell us what's going on with your crusade across the country with the free clinics.
Oh, my crusade! Yes. Okay. So we still have the understanding, or maybe people don't have the understanding. So that for every $1 that we spend, we actually save our community $7.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty darn good savings. How does that work? Well, you know, people who don't have doctors or whatever, when they get sick, what do they do? Well, they go to the ER because they don't have to pay. And they can't pay, so ultimately the hospital has to write it off. Well, going to the ER for a cold or for a sore throat or strep throat or for a fever is a very expensive way to take care of that. Those little things can be taken care of by, say, an urgency, by the free clinic. So they come to us, care of it. We save, you know, we treat them in 5-10 minutes, whatever. We give them the medication that they need. It maybe costs us in total $100 between the time that we spend and the medicine that we give them. But we saved the emergency room $700. Translation, we saved the community $700.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now,
when's the next free clinic going to be here in Charlotte or around the closest to us?
Well, I don't know that we're going to have one pretty soon, but what I do know is going to happen. We need donations. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So those who are national, you can go to www.nafc, National Association of Free Clinics, .org, and donate that way.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who are in Cabarrus County, you can go to Cabarrus County Community Free Clinic, .org, and you know that's how you just need to Google them, and if we don't donate that way. The other way thing you can do also is just support the different fundraisers, you know, that different community free clinics do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Michael, I'm opening my own clinic. And what I want to do is take care of the people, aside from the free clinic, I want to take care of the people that are disqualified. Disqualified because
right.
They make too much money. And it's quick
mm-hmm.
to understand. And they can't really see somebody because they can't afford the $225 it costs to walk into a doctor's office. So I'm looking at a whole new concept now, which is going to bridge the gap between the free clinic and then when people who can make, you know, elderly people qualify for Medicaid or Medicare. I want to bridge that gap because that's a huge gap. That's the people who are falling through the cracks because they can't afford. I mean, really, it's all a money talks, ins and bands, kind of a thing.
You're right. You're right. Well, I want to thank both my two of my most favorite people. And I'm going to be doing a show.
He says that about everyone. You know that, right? He says that about everyone.
That's a grace. I couldn't. I can't make. Claim that, huh?
Who me?
So
I'm going to be doing I'm going to be doing a show Friday from the summit. So everybody just listening, you'll be hearing everybody up there will have something to say. I am sure. And I want to thank you, Grace. I want to thank you, Brad, for being on.
I've been doing it a great deal, and it's good to meet you, Grace. Over the
and Michael, we need to talk. We need to talk
yes,
off air, okay?
All right. I'll call you later as soon as I'm off.
Take care, y'all.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. I think we had a little problem in the very beginning because, again, Skype was so sluggish getting on. I have no idea why. I got to speak to them people again and find out what the deal is. But we just heard from Brad Thompson and Grace Lean. And, you know, it is so important that we understand what is happening. Nothing gets done without your involvement. Nothing gets done. Nothing gets done without your involvement. And when you're involved, then you can see the fruits of what you have planted. These people who we elect are only going to do what we let them do. That's all. They're only going to do what we let them do. This is a representative government. This is not a democracy. We must elect people in the primaries, during the primaries, that will best or will do the best and that will represent us for what we want the most. You can't expect to vote for someone and that person wants every single thing that you want every single time something comes up. We're all individuals. We all look at things differently. We look at things differently because of our environment, how we were brought up, what we eat. All this reflects why we do things. Things are not done in a vacuum. Things are not done in a vacuum. Things are done because of the force of our personalities and how we perceive things. Now, there's something that most people really don't understand, and that is, what is the reason why we can say people are flip-floppers? I'm not bringing anybody's name into the matter, Mitt Romney, but why are people flip-floppers? Is it because they don't care about, they don't have any core beliefs that they could stick to? Is it because they want to be friends with everybody? Is it because they want to just get over. They want their own way all the time, and they will do anything. They'll go any lengths to get what they want done. Or is it because all of the above? Well, we have a person named, I wasn't going to mention Mitt Romney, but I'm mentioning Mitt Romney. And I'm going to mention the entire Regressive Party. A little over 70%. Let's say 60%. A little over 60% of the bills that Barack Obama has tried to pass have been Republican bills. Not bills from last month or last year, but bills they couldn't get through because of a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate. And really not even because of that, because they didn't have enough Republicans also pursuing them and forcing them through. Healthcare is one of the few that the president has been pushing since he came to office. And we have people in our own party who will sit down and say, no, that's not the way he should have did it. He shouldn't have done that. He shouldn't have done it this way. He should have went ahead and got jobs. Well, you know, we have a major problem there. The first day he was in office after he was inaugurated, Mitch McConnell, the Regressive Party Senate leader, said, our number one job is to make sure Barack Obama does not have a second term. Now let's see. Let's take this. This isn't rocket science here. You know, this is not rocket science. If we're going to make sure that someone does not get a second term, why would you want to pass any of his bills? Any of his bills. Don't care if they were your bill, he took them, stole them from it, and wanted to pass them. Why would you want him to have any benefit at all in passing any legislation that he can now tout when he goes on the road for a second term? This is what I've done for you. So we're talking nonsense here. We're absolutely talking nonsense. There are some Republicans now that are still left. Very few. Because the Regressive Party takeover of the Republican Party is almost like the plague in ancient times. It just went into the very fiber of everyone and just ate them down to the bone. We have a problem here because, as I was saying to Brad and asked him, you know, well, how can we get anything done if nobody wants to get anything done? We have the people who are elected to office. I went to a debate today. And I want to tell you, very few. I went to a county commission debate here in Mecklenburg County, where I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. Charlotte's in Mecklenburg, I should say. But I went to a debate this morning of the county commissioners. There's 12 of them running. And one of the first questions, if not the first question, was asked, What does the county commissioner do? Do you know there wasn't more than four people that answered that question like they knew what they were saying? Some looked like they were caught in a deer with the headlights. It was pitiful. It was for our local public television station here. And everybody is welcome to run as a politician. Everybody is welcome to run for any position at any time because this is a representative government. This is not a theocracy yet. This is not a, what do you call a, where you have a, well, it's theocracy is about the worst. But it's not a government where people have no say in their government. We are the government. We elect the people to run. This is a representative government. This is not a democracy. People have no idea what a democracy means. They have no idea. They think we have a democracy here in the United States, and we do not. We have a representative republic. What needs to be done is that people need to go back to school and take some sort of civics class to see what a democracy does, what a representative government does, what a socialist government does, what a communist government does, what a theocratic government does. They need to understand. These are all different types of government, and ours is representative. But just because we have a representative government and anybody can run, that does not mean that everybody is good enough to run. And when I say good enough, they have to be there because you want them to run. So they're going to be there because they believe in what you're saying for the most part. Not 100%, for the most part, that you're reasonable with it. And that for the betterment of society and where you live, compromise will get things done. We have this agency. I hope it loses its 501c3, but it's called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. They're the ones that have been pushing all these laws, like Stand Your Ground law. Like the marriage law. Most of the elected officials that have signed on to be a part of ALEC are Republican. And most of these elected officials who have signed on to ALEC have not written a bill ever. ALEC writes all their bills and gives them the bill. That's right. They give them the bill. Some of these legislators have not even seen the bill that has their signature on it. Because Alex has made sure they've gotten money not to notice what was in the bill. when the Stand Your Own Ground, when the Stand Your Ground law was passed, there are several legislators who signed on the bill, what was in the bill, and they had no idea. They said, oh, I have to go back and read that. Same thing with the Marriage Act. They had no idea what is in this bill. So we need to make sure that people are well aware what's in this bill. We have to make sure that people are well aware of how this bill works. That's what we need to do. And for right now, people don't know what's in this bill, the Stand Your Ground bill, the Marriage Act bill. They have no idea what's in those bills. And this is some of the major problems that we are having right now. So we're waiting to have another call in here, and I am looking over to see whether or not my sound again? I don't think so, but let's see here. I thought I didn't, but maybe I have. Let me go look at this again. Let's see here. Skype profile. And let's see. Nope, that's the wrong one. So let's see what your settings. Nope, I'm doing fine with my audio settings. So, but what we need to do is to make sure that everyone understands about how government works. Now, we're going to be doing a show on just that, how government works, how a bill becomes a law. We're going to be doing all that. Because most people, again, as I said before, have no idea how it works. Now, we have a caller on the line right now, and let's see who this caller is. Hello?
Hello, is that me? Michael?
Yes, who is this?
Hi, Michael, it's Matt Newton.
Matt Newton.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Matt Newton, who is one of the youngest, although I thought he was actually 16, but he's really a lot older than that, ladies and gentlemen. This man is going to be, I think, a very, very inspirational elected official. And you need to understand who he is and what he's running for. Tell us, Matt, who are you and what are you running for?
My name is Matt Newton. I do look 16, admittedly. I'm actually twice that age. I'm 32, and I'm running for U.S. House of Representatives in the 12th District of North Carolina.
Now, the 12th district, everybody knows, is Mel Watts district.
Yes, sir.
And tell us why, as a Democrat, you wanted to run for office.
Well, I feel like our district can be doing better. I feel like we have an unemployment rate that is unspeakable. We could be treating our employees, or employers could be treating their employees better, as well as a broken education system that needs fixing. And being who I am, young, energetic, and enthusiastic, I want to go up to Washington and fight for us. I think maybe it's time that we pass the torch and a younger generation stepped up and took its role in government.
Well, right now, the question I always ask, people that are running for office, and what does the job as a representative, a U.S. House representative, do for the people in the 12th district and for the rest of the country? Because when you're an elected official a representative in Washington, you might be one of, was it 445 or how many is it? About 445. But what do you do?
Well, the way I view the role as a representative in Washington, it's someone who is a local official representing the people. And it's someone that certainly, and I'm sure everyone knows this, is someone who votes on bills that go to the floor, but also someone who's involved in committee hearings, involved in markups of potential bills in committee, whether or not those get out of committee, but also someone who will debate on bills that are proposed in the floor, and for the purposes of the position I'm running for, the floor of the House of Representatives. Also, someone who will take an active role in supporting the needs of his or her constituents. So, for example, if a police force needs to receive benefits from the Department of Justice, my office, if I'm the elected official, will step in, speak with the Department of Justice, and get that handled. Just as much so as a veteran needing veterans benefits, or a veterans organization such as the American Legion needing assistance in receiving benefits from the Veterans Administration. That would be the role of my office or any congressional House of Representatives office to step in and take an active role in helping out that constituent.
Okay, so I said 445 before, I meant 435, but with the Senate another 100, so it's 535. But the representative from the House not only really works for his constituents or her constituents, they should work as 435 people for the good of the entire country. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I believe so too. I certainly think it's a much broader responsibility. It's something in we can talk about bills like the Affordable Health Care Act. We can talk about my stance on labor. Something that is much further reaching than simply my constituents. But having said that, at the same time, I certainly have an emphasis on helping my constituents as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, where are the top two or three areas that you think need definite action to help your constituents?
Well, in District 12, number one, and I say this, the cornerstone of my campaign has been on the ground, boots on the ground, shoe leather, going door to door, speaking with the people I hope to represent, and talking about the issues that affect them personally, and also talking about the solutions to those issues. And the number one issue I'm coming across is jobs. Jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what I hear. And I think that there's a lot that can be done in our district. I think that we have a deplorable unemployment rate. It's fifth in the country. And it's also 1 point above our state average.
You said it's fifth? It's the unemployment rate is fifth from the lowest or fifth from the highest?
Oh, I'm sorry?
You say the unemployment rate is fifth from the lowest or fifth from the highest?
Fifth from the highest. Mm-hmm. We're a tick over 11%. And, of course, that disproportionately impacts the young African-American male community, which is much higher. And I feel like there's a lot that can be done. It's going down in our country. President Obama's economic stimulus package is working. However, for whatever reason, it's going up in District 12, and that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things today, President Obama was at Chapel Hill, and he was talking about the July 1st, the student loan problem that is – I think it's 3.8% now, 3.6%, is supposed to double July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is your, if you were in the House now, what would be one of the main things that you would cite if you were for or against this?
Yeah, I'm completely for the federal, the Student Loan Forgiveness Act that President Obama is proposing. I'm for just about everything. I am the Obama generation, and so I support the president in everything he's done.
What I was trying to get at, Matt, that he wants the Congress not to let the act that was the Affordable Student Loan Act to be canceled out, so it doubles July 1st. So what I was saying is that you are against that, or you for having it double?
No. I think if what you mean is the interest rate from from 3.4
might be running right.
Yeah. It's in my viewpoint, our federal student loan debt is the next bubble in our country. It just ticked over $1 trillion, and we need to do everything, just not for the sake of students and for the sake of graduates who are trying to earn a living and pay for their families in our current workforce, but also for the sake of our economy. I think we need to do everything we can to help students. The 10-10 plan is one that I like in Congress right now as well, a plan that would help graduates pay off upwards of $45,000 of student loan debt with the aid of the federal government, and that's something along with keeping the interest rate low that will not only benefit the future of our country but help us right now in our economy. It will allow for more money to free flow, as well as it will allow for more innovative small businesses to open up. And I think it's extremely important that we do everything in our power to help out the generation that is, and let's be clear about this. I mean, we're talking about, I say a generation, but we're talking about people, my generation, people in their 40s and even their 50s that are completely hamstrung by their student loan debt.
Well, as a matter of fact, student loan debt now is larger than credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
So that means when you come out, and the president said today something that it was only the average student loan debt is $25,000. I thought it was much higher than that, but that's, hey, a dollar is bad if you don't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
So what is going to be the emphasis, how you can tell one of the aggressive party members that this interest rate doesn't need to go up, and the schools, as the president said today, who do increase their interest rate would be getting less, if any, federal aid?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I back the president 200,000,000% on that stance. I think that we need to see not only the increase in the interest rate, but also we need to see to it that schools do a better job with state government to lower tuition costs as well. We find ourselves in a country now where college is no longer available and affordable to anyone and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the cornerstone, just as much so as me going door-to-door, cornerstone of my campaign is to reinstill upward mobility in our country. I want to see to it that the American dream comes back. I want to see to it that it doesn't matter who you are, where you were born, it could be the nether region of this country, you have an equal opportunity to be whomever and whatever you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is a quality that we need in all our elected officials. And if you hold on 1 minute here, Matt, let's see. We got somebody else on the line here. Hello, who's this?
This is Mark Gustafson.
Mark Gustafson. And Mark, I have Matt Newton on the phone right now also. Say hello.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
Hi, Mark.
This is Mark Gustafson. You are running for what position?
Mecklenburg County Commissioner at Large.
Okay. If you just hold on a minute, Mark. Matt, some of the things – now, Mark is going to be running for a county commission. you are going to be, if you make it, would be in the House. Now, a lot of the things that we, the problems that the county has right now, is from unfunded mandates from the state and the federal government. Now, how can some of these unfunded mandates be corralled and changed so the counties, because always you pass the unfunded mandate on the state, and the state just passes it back down the line to the county commission in the city. So how can some of these things be addressed, these unfunded mandates?
Well, maybe to dovetail into what you were mentioning before, Michael, we need to see to it that we have more accountable and better educated elected representatives. People that are going to represent the interest, the best interest of the constituents and all those constituents. Those of us that will see to it that we will not get a wink of sleep until we see that until the needs of our communities are fulfilled. And if it is, and I think a prime example of this is education. Prime example. The federal government has underfunded Title I schools by 62%. It needs to do a better job of that funding, just as much so as state government needs to do a better job of spending the Title I funding.
Before you go on, Matt, explain to the audience what a Title I school is.
Well, Title I schools are schools, low-income public schools, and I think it's shameful. We have a system in Washington right now with no child behind. The current policy is to defund schools that need the most help. Those schools that don't meet standardized testing requirements, and these standardized testing requirements are set by the states. But having said that, those schools get defunded and the teachers lose their jobs. I think that's the absolute wrong approach. It's backward. Now, having said that, and to kind of touch on ALEC, the group you were mentioning earlier, Michael, ALEC is alive and well in Raleigh. There's a legislator out of Cornelius named Tom Tillis who actually used an ALEC bill to attempt. And at this point, I don't know if Bev Perdue's veto has been overridden yet, but to attempt to completely defund pre-K education. And that's certainly someone who is not working within the best interest of, if you ask me, of the state or his constituents. And I feel as though it's upon us, it's our duty as constituents within a district to get to the polls and vote. If someone is acting this way, we need to make it a priority to get representatives in office who are going to do the right thing, who are going to fund the right programs all the way down the line.
Well, now it goes dovetails into Mark. What happens if Nitwit Tillis defunds pre-K and K in the state? What can the county do? We have to have pre-K and K.
That's right.
What happens then?
We know that children are showing up for school not prepared to even start school, much less when they get going in school, but they're not even starting on the same starting line as everyone else. You know, one of the proposals I have, and I talked to Vic Phillips at the public library, is that we need to work with the public libraries to work on early childhood literacy. That's a critical point. We know that we have children that come to school not even held a book in their hands. So they don't know whether to turn it upside down, right side up, beginning reading from the front or reading from the back. We got to focus on that early childhood literacy so that when they do show up, that they're ready for school. But we can't keep cutting. And you're exactly right. When people in the state level cut funds, it falls down to the county, and the burdens become local burdens.
Okay, but you're absolutely correct. But what I want to know is, what if you were on the county commission, what could you do about that if they did cut funding?
Yeah, I think that we're going to have to find a place to come up with those funds, because we've got to have kids ready for school when they walk in on the very first day. Because we know if they're not ready on reading level by third or fourth grade, that there's a good chance that they're going to end up either a dropout or in jail. So I think we make an investment at the county level in pre-K, and we try to save our money in dropouts and in jail costs later on down the road. We've got to start looking at these things as investments and not spending. Too often we're talking about education as spending. Money that is put into education is not spending, it's an investment, and we've got that. We've got to fund that. We've got to find a way to do that.
Now, this is a question to both of you. Don't you think that education is like a military? I mean, without our military, we could be invaded, we could be taken over. I mean, it's like 1776 again. I mean, what if we don't have education, where would we be? So shouldn't the top priorities be, if we're going to have priorities, education, the military, and health care? Because if you can't keep the people who are fighting for us healthy, and their kids, what good is it anyway?
That's right, Michael. I think we have to have economic security. That's one thing that's gone on with this economic downturn is people feel like the rug has been pulled out from underneath them, and we're just not economically secure anymore. And without an educated workforce, you know, that starts with early childhood literacy, then we've got to do K through 12, and then we've got to do the workforce development at the community colleges so that we're ready, we're prepared economically to compete with China and India and every other country in the world. Because if we're not, then we're weak, and maybe we're not weak on a military front, but we're weak on an economic front, and we can be invaded economically.
Well, absolutely. Well, Pence's regressive party up there has already cut the funding to the community colleges. I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't cut funding to pre-K or K. I mean, it's something that if it came down tomorrow, you're sitting there, and they said, okay, you have no more money for pre-K. None. You got zilch, nothing, nada. Now what happens? What is the first step that you see, sitting on the county commission, that you could do or start to do?
We've got to go look at every item in the budget. You know, I've got a copy of the budget sitting on my desk, and it's about 3 inches mm-hmm. thick. And we've got to go look at every item in that budget and see where we can cut, whether it's administrative costs, technology costs, salary costs. We're all going to have to make sacrifices. And there's the opportunity that we may have to raise taxes. No one wants to hear that
in this downturn.
And I don't want to do that, and I don't think that we should be taxing people, especially in a tax revaluation year where property values are going up. But we've got to look critically and very intensively at our community and what we want our community to look like. And my wife and I moved to Charlotte to raise a family. We're both from here, and we came back here, could have gone anywhere in the world, but we came back here, and we came here for public schools, public library, and parks and recreation. And so if we want those things in our community, then we have to be willing to pay for them.
Well, this is the thing. We're the 17th largest city in the country. We, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. I mean, you have to, if you want something, you have to pay for it.
Yes, sir.
If you want to have baseball teams, if you want to have basketball teams, you want to have football teams, you want to have the best healthcare hospitals, you want to have the best educated children, you have to pay for it. So we can no longer, and this is going to you, Matt, the country seems like today, with the regressive party that's in charge, we don't need any of these things because I got mine, you get yours. So the mentality, how do we change the mentality that is now infested, what I call it, the regressive party that's in Washington about what matters in our life?
I think it's education, plain and simple. We need to have educated voters. ones that won't vote against their own self-interest. There will come a tipping point, and I hope it's soon, where we get a lot of these anti-compassionate Republicans out of office, and replace them with people that understand the value of our social programs and understand the value of a strong country with a good education and universal health care. Those are all things that make us better as a whole and not better individually. And I think that's what we have, is we have a group of representatives, and I'll call them flat out politicians. You said flip floppers even earlier, who are just in it for themselves. We need to have more representatives who are in it for all of us, and understand that we are all in this together. And I think that that's the best way of doing that. And of course, if it were up to me, I think we could uptick capital gains taxes, have a higher corporate rate, maybe even instill a luxury and an estate tax. We're looking at a tax rate right now that is one of the lowest that we've ever had. And we have a representative from Washington who say that it's still not enough. It needs to be lower, and yet they're paying lower tax rates than their own secretaries. There isn't – I think if there comes a point where we have to put our foot down and say enough's enough, and we have a prime opportunity to do that, May 8th, just as much so in November. So hopefully voters are educated as to who they're voting for, and they get out to the polls and choose the right people.
Well, Mark, Matt, and Mike. Boy, the three of them sound like the Yankee Stadium Bowl. Mark, what you were saying, so you were at the debate this morning.
That's right.
And one of the questions was about the property tax.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I lived in New York my entire life. I mean, in New York, and some of these people are paying, what we paid for a container of milk in New York City for the property tax. They have no idea. They have no idea what property taxes are. They keep saying, we're one of the highest. I can't believe that Charlotte is one of the highest. I cannot believe that, or Mecklenburg County. That is absolute rot. The problem is that we have a situation here where people want things for free. They don't want to pay for what they get. And yet, they will be the first to complain. You know, as I said before, a lot of people get on me for saying it, but, you know, this isn't Mayberry anymore. It's not Mayberry. This is the 17th largest city in the country.
That's
and
right.
We need to pay for the things that we want that are nice, that is a real – we have the banks here. We have all these major industries here. Now, maybe some people don't want – they want to live in the good old 1890s again. But most people are moving here because it's not the 1890s. They're coming – the industry is not coming here because it's the 1890s. The industry is coming here because it's progressive. So
that's right.
And one of the other things that I am leaning for, and I know the mayor has been thinking about the same thing, is we need to combine the county commission and city council like all the other major cities. You see, right now we have the county commission, which people don't know what they do. We have the city council, where people don't know what to do. We got the mayor, where people don't know what to do. We got the county manager. You got the school board. You know, everybody points the finger in 16 different directions when something goes wrong. You need to have one city council with a president, which is combined the county and the city. You need to have a mayor where you can fire both of them, get rid of them out of office, and blame them. Right now, it's the blame game. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, I know the mayor's talked about city and county consolidation, and I'm absolutely for it in theory. I think that we need to do things that save money, that create efficiencies, that we shouldn't duplicate services, and we got to get rid of those places where we are. Right now, I think we do a pretty good job of contracting between city and county. County provides water, trash, police services. City does all those things. County provides schools, parks and rec. So we have a pretty good working relationship, but if there are inefficiencies, we got to get rid of those. Now, I don't want to force consolidation on anybody that doesn't want it, so we've got to talk about all of those things. We've got to think about what you said maybe we have one board, one city-county board. We've got to know what that looks like. I don't think a board of 20 people is any more effective than what we currently have. So what is that going to look like? What do we do with the two managers? What does our mayor become? Is he then a full-time mayor? So I just think we've got to make sure that we think through all these things. But absolutely, you were talking about money for pre-K and other programs.
Mm-hmm.
If we can find ways to get more efficient in the city and the county and save money that we can then invest in other places. Because you were saying that, you know, we live in a 2012 city and people live here because we're modern. And it's because of those investments. It's because of the investments in the light rail. It's the investments in the Uptown Arena. It's investments in the Uptown Cultural Facilities and Discovery Place up in Huntersville. And those are all investments that sometimes are a hard pill to swallow, but in the long run, those have big returns for us.
Well, yeah, and the thing is that to me, as a politician, if you can sell yourself getting elected, you can sell yourself to the voters on these ideas. I mean, that's your job. And the thing is that, you know, what it looks like when you have a consolidation, hey, the mayor is the one that hangs. If something goes wrong, he's gone or she's gone. I mean, get rid of these county managers and these city managers. That's worthless. They don't need that when you have a consolidation county commission and city council and one president. They will control all those things. I guarantee you, 8 out of 9 people that you stop on the street could not tell you what the city council does or what the county commission does. And you have a school bus pick up a kid. School bus picks him up, drops him off. I mean, who's in charge of that? I went to a bunch of people at a school board meeting. They had no idea who was in charge of that bus because it changes. You know, so this is a problem. You guys would know because you're in the city council and the county commission. You know where everything is separated at. But most people in the city here don't know. Well, hey, they don't know what the sheriff does. They don't know what the police commissioner, what the police chief does. And so it's education. We need to educate the people here. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. You know, many of the people that I run into on the campaign trail don't know who provides what services. I'll tell you, I know who provides my water because I write them a check every month and it goes straight to the city of Charlotte. I know that my county property taxes go right to the Mecklenburg County because when they pull that out of my mortgage every month, that goes to. And that brings up a good point for me, Michael, is that, you know, I've heard a lot lately people say that they're not involved in politics.
Mm-hmm.
We all pay a heck of a lot of money in property taxes for you not to be involved. There are people paying, you know, thousands of dollars every single month. It doesn't go to their mortgage, it doesn't go to their insurance, but is paid directly to the county. We're all involved in county politics, and those funds go to parks and rec, schools, social services, health care, and all those things that are so important to our county. So for me, when people say that they're not involved in politics, I just don't believe that.
Well, listen, I say on my show, the beginning of my show every day, you know, you're in politics from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. They have their hand in it.
That's exactly right.
So this is a major issue with me. I think that the political leaders in the city and the county and on the national level do not do a good enough job selling what they do to their constituents. Most people, Matt, most people have no idea what the 12th District U.S. House Representative does. Mark, 70% of the people have no idea what the county commissioner does. You do because, hey, you need to know. But when they write out a bill, they're writing out a bill. You know, like, I don't even write out the bill anymore. I pay online. So I don't know who it's going to anymore. I couldn't tell you. I know it's going out. You know, so the thing is that this is a problem. We're losing the direct involvement because of the new age that we're in. Everything is done automatically. There's no more paying the, you know, when I was a little kid, I remember the insurance man used to come by my house to see my mother and father every Friday, and you would give him like, I don't know, $5 or something, and he'd mark it off in a book. I mean, that's how you paid for your insurance back then. That's no more. Everything is done, in a clean room now, or as Mitt Romney says, in a quiet room. Well, I'd like both of you, first, Matt, can you please tie up why people need to vote for you for the 12th District for the U.S. House?
Well, plain and simple, do we want more of the same? What we have, and to touch on a point, Michael, that you had just mentioned, I think people don't understand what the representatives do, and they don't really keep track of what the representatives have done. I am someone who will be only accountable to the people of the district, not accountable to any special interests. I will see to it that we will not be giving away hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars to the banks or the entertainment industry. I will see to it that money goes where it belongs and back to the people. And what I mean by that is I will see to it that we do fund Title I schools. We do pass President Obama's American Jobs Act to fund built projects, infrastructure, housing, education, that we also see to it that we fund Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, make sure that veterans get the benefits they deserve for a change. And I think that's why I ask and I hope that everyone votes for me and puts me up in Washington to go up and fight for us for a change.
I need to ask you one question. If you were to get in, that would be a major, seat from North Carolina that would not have the same connections that our present U.S. House rep would have. And we might not, don't you think, or do you think that would be a problem for the constituents in Charlotte, in the 12th District?
I don't think so. I think we need to ask ourselves, where are we now? You know, change, I spoke in front of Livingston College on Saturday, and I started by saying that change isn't easy, but it is inevitable. Our representatives can't be in office forever. And we need to make sure that those who replace representatives that we have are the right people. And I can assure you, and I want to assure all of your listeners, Michael, that I am the right person. Go to the polls on May 8th and vote Matt Newton.
Okay, and where can you find out more information about you?
MattNewtonForCongress.com. We have on my website, we have statements regarding ways we can bring jobs back to the district, education, environment, a Bill of Rights for our veterans, among other salient points there, as well as we have a link to my Facebook and my Twitter.
What's your email address? Because I was looking for it. I couldn't find it.
MattNewtonForCongress@yahoo.com.
Matt Newton for Congress. Is that a number four or the word four?
It's a four, F-O-R. Same thing with the website, Matt Newton, FORCongress.com.
Okay, so it's Matt Newton for Congress at Yahoo, what'd you say it was?
Yes, Yahoo.com. And let me give you my campaign manager's email is nance@mattnewtonforcongress.com. And that's N-A-N-C.
Okay. All righty. And I want to thank you, Matt, for being with us. And I wish you luck.
Thank you so much. It was absolutely my pleasure. Thanks again, Michael, and best of luck, Mark, and have a wonderful afternoon, you guys.
Thanks, okay, Matt.
Mark, can you tie up some of the things that you wanted to say? Why do we need to vote for you for County Commission?
Yes, sir. As I said earlier today, we're at a critical point in our county. We've experienced probably the deepest, darkest downturn that any of us will face in our lives economically. That's pulled the rug out from thousands of people in our county. That's pulled the rug out underneath college graduates that can't find a job, middle-class folks that are having trouble paying their bills and supporting their families, and our retirees who've seen their retirement funds just disappear and be cut by half. So right now we've got scared people, and they're looking for leadership, and they're looking to our county commissioner, our city council, our school board, and our state and federal officials. And I don't think right now that they're getting that confidence from their leaders. A lot of people can stand up in front of you and tell you all the things they're going to do for you. I think you can judge a person's actions by what they've done in the past when no one's watching. I was an Eagle Scout. I was appointed to the Mecklenburg Parks and Rec Advisory Board, the Keep Charlotte Beautiful Committee. I helped found a program called Guys Read at West Boulevard Public Library, where we worked with young men to get them reading when we knew that they stopped. I've worked on the Arts and Science Council. I started the Young Donor Society. I'm on the Diversity Inclusion Task Force. I serve on the Public Art Commission that just lit that bridge under 77 as you go up Beatty's Ford. I've been on the board of the McCall Center for Visual Arts. I work with a group called Spokes Group. We give away nearly 2,000 bikes a year through the Salvation Army Christmas Bureau. And these are just to name a few of the things that I've done. So, I say it's easy to stand up and make a lot of promises, but I think right. You can prove that by the things that you've done when no one was watching. So I think we need new leaders. I think we need new ideas. I think we need leaders that are going to give our citizens confidence that their interests are being looked out for. We've got to create the kind of community that we want to live in by making the right investments. We've got to spend taxpayer dollars effectively, efficiently, and fairly. I hope people on May 8th will come out and vote for Mark Gustafson for Mecklenburg County Commissioner. My website is markformec.com. It's markformec.com. My email is mark@markformec.com. That's markformec.com, and you can and reach us there anytime.
I want to thank you, Mark, and it was good seeing you today, and I wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you, Michael, very much. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
That was Mark Gustafson, who is running for county commission, and Matt Newton, who's running for District 12, U.S. House District 12, representative that's now being held by incumbent Mel Watt. So we wish them all a good, happy journey. We are going to be up at the, as I said before, the North Carolina Black Summit Thursday and Friday and Saturday, and it is going to be a major, major event. I've gone there every year. Matter of fact, this is their seventh year, and I've been there five times. And each year it has gotten larger and larger and larger, with more job fairs and more sessions. I believe Brad said that we're going to have a session on, that will be Friday, we're going to have the education achieving the promise when the money is tight. They're going to have a session on redistricting, the facts and what we can do about them. Healthcare, dying early, is not an acceptable option. And then in the afternoon, they're going to have more speakers on each one of those sessions, and I'm going to be doing my show probably during the 3 to 5 p.m. or the 3 to 6 p.m. Time slot. So you can just listen to the same, tune in the same time, same bat channel, and you'll be able to hear me. I believe one is going to be the Ralph Campbell Leadership Reception, and it's going to be hosted by Moses Carey. So then we have the Kathy Hughes is going to be there from the president of Radio 1 and TV 1. She's an entrepreneur. She started the first station in the country, a news outlet, television station. I believe it was in Atlanta. She'll be there. So it is going to be a major, major packed official gathering. And if you can make it, it's going to be 421 South Salisbury Street in Raleigh. And let's see, we also have coming up on our list is the banquet, the 8th District Black Leadership Caucus Banquet, which is going to be May 5th, and that's going to be in Albemarle at the EYDEL Community Center. And that is going to be also another major affair that people can go to, meet your elected officials. I believe Eric Mansfield is going to be at that particular, yes, he is. He's going to be the guest speaker. He'll be there at the 8th District, that's the 8th District of Black Leadership Caucus Banquet, and I will be the host. What else do we have coming up here? I just saw something on the air here that just came across the computer. I just want to get off topic for a little bit. Before I get off topic, before I get on this, we're going to be doing a show. I believe it's going to be, I have to check in the next 2 weeks, it's going to be on the DC and Marvel comic book characters. How they appear in the comic books and how they have appeared in film and on television. We're going to have someone who is thoroughly involved with DC and Marvel comic strips characters and knows every one of them. I think he must have lived with them. Thomas Fortenberry, he'll be on the show. And then I'll have Mr. George Gaffney, he will be on the show. He's a film critic and from Greenville, South Carolina, and he's going to be talking about how these superheroes have appeared in film and on television. And this is just before the opening day of the Avenger movie. So I hope that you'll be listening. I will get that out as soon as I get the time down, because it might be a later broadcast. It's probably going to be in the 7 to 8 o'clock p.m. range, because I want both of these gentlemen to be on the show at the same time, and we've been having trouble getting them both together. They have such independent and varied lives. So please listen. I will just look in on the schedule, and I will be putting that up as soon as I get that information. I hope it's this weekend, maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow, but it'll be up there. Also, I wanted to talk about, as I said, let me go back to what I was saying. There has been a report of a super, super hypersensitive, hypersonic aircraft that has flown and it crashed in the Pacific Ocean. It says here, it says that the super secret hypersensitive aircraft, hypersonic aircraft, I should say, it turns out that it was tearing through the atmosphere at, now this is unmanned now, 20 times the speed of sound, and that the high-tech aircraft developed by the government's best engineers and developed by the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, DARPA, has made its first public information let out to the press. It's an unmanned arrowhead-shaped hypersonic technology vehicle, HTV-2. And that it suddenly lost contact and crashed into the Pacific Ocean just minutes after slicing through the sky at Mach 20 last August. So this happened almost a year ago. It said it was going so fast that the skin peeled off the aircraft. After an eight-month investigation, DARPA concluded that even though the HTV-2 was – what happened to the HTV-1? Anyway, it was expected to lose some of its skin in mid-flight, so they expected that to happen. Larger than anticipated portions of the vehicle skin peeled from the aerostructure, the agency said. He said that he expected that the HTV-2, which goes so fast it can make a commute from New York to Los Angeles in 12 minutes, experienced an impulse shockwave at such speeds. But this shock that it experienced last August was more than 100 times what the vehicle was designated to withstand. While the test was very public, the details of the HTV to design stability system and potential proposed remains highly classified. 2 months after DARPA tested, the Army tested its own hypersensitive aircraft. This one, a long-range weapon system called the Advanced Hypersonic Weapons, AHW, designed to strike any target in the world in just a couple of hours. So if you see something streaking across the sky, ladies and gentlemen, if you see something streaking across the sky, it's us. It ain't them. Now, I had mentioned something about this. Also, before I forget, I want to talk about everybody about voting. Let me mention one other thing. The Hal Marshall Center here in, we are voting here in North Carolina. And in Mecklenburg County, well, it's mandatory across the state, everybody's voting, but right here in North Carolina, we are in Charlotte. We're voting at the Hal Marshall Annex that's located at 618 North College Street on the first floor. And that will be the only place we'll be voting from April 19th to the 27th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Now, starting April 30th to May 4th, you can vote at Hal Marshall Annex from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., but you can also vote at these additional locations: the Bates Ford Library, the Cornelius Town Hall, Hayes Building in Ballantyne, Independence Regional Library, the Main Branch Library downtown, the Marion Deal Rec Center, Matthews Branch Library, Morrison Regional Library, the Mountain Island Library, the North County Regional Library, the South County Regional Library, the Steel Creek Library, University City Regional Library, and the West Boulevard Library. And you can vote at all those places beginning April 30th to May the 4th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Now, at the Hal Marshall Center, you will vote on April 3rd to May 4th from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. So Hal Marshall will be open a little earlier than those libraries. Now, you also have one additional day of voting, which is the one-sided vote that the Progressive Party didn't take away from us. May the 5th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's a Saturday. You can vote at Hal Marshall, or you can vote at those libraries that I just mentioned. Now, my website is my new website is under construction, and I won't have this up until I get it done, but it will be up shortly. I also wanted to talk about our friend, Mitt, the Mr. Man. The Mr. Man has talked about how he's just one of us. Well, let me read you a little something here while I still have some time here. I am a liberator of jobs and companies. The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for the lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed, in all of its forms, greed for life, greed for money, greed for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind. The richest 1% of this country owns half of our country's wealth, over $5 trillion. One-third that comes from hard work, two-thirds comes from inheritance, interest on interest accumulated to widows and idiot sons, and what I do, stock and real estate speculation. You've got 90% of the American public out there with little or no net worth. I create nothing. I own nothing. I own. We make the rules. The news, war, peace, famine, upheaval, the price per paperclip. We pick the rabbit out of the hat while everybody sits out there wondering how the hell we did it. Now, you're not naive enough to think we're living in a democracy, are you, buddy? It's the free market, and you're a part of it. You've got that killer instinct. Stick around, pal. That was said by Mitt Romney's twin, Gordon Gekko. Now, what in there don't you see in Mitt Romney? It's all about greed. He worked for Bain Capital. He said that he risked his money working for Bain Capital. He lied. He was given Bain Capital on a platter. And then he was told that, don't worry about it. If you lose your money, we'll give it back to you and give you your old job back. He has no idea what risk is. So I just want everybody to remember that greed is not good. Greed is not good. And when Fox Radio tells you that greed is good, just remember who's telling that to you. As Barack Obama said, I was not born with a silver spoon in my mouth. This has been The Last Word, and I'm Michael Lawson. Remember, this Friday, 3 to 5, I'll be at the North Carolina Black Summit. Want everybody to come up and listen. I will be waiting for you. And thank you, everybody, for wishing me a happy birthday. I'll see you Friday.